I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
You're listening to The Tillage Podcast with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hello, and you're very welcome to this week's Tillage Podcast. I'm Siobhan Walsh, recording on Thursday morning, the 1st of February, St. Bridget's Day. So happy St. Bridget's Day to you all. It's 1,500 years since St. Bridget died, and a long time since her cape went across the Curra, but a saint long associated with farming. So hopefully this spring, as it kicks off today, it will be a bright one. And the tillage sector had a bright day yesterday at the Chagas National Tillage Conference. And earlier this week as well, the department increased the tillage payment from 28 to 50 euro. So we'll have details from both later on. We'll also have results of the Chagas Winter Planting Survey, advice on how to deal with poor crops and plantings from Chagas' Shea Phelan and Dermot Forrestal, as well as results on the carbon footprint of Irish grain from John Spink. As always, we have the grain market and weather reports as well. Okay, good news this week. Look, that payment that was announced earlier in the year of 28 euro per hectare, 11 euro per acre is going to be topped up, or is topped up. So basically that money came from a reserve fund for dealing with the effects of the war in Ukraine. And I know a lot of people annoyed at the time at the low level of that payment. So that payment now has been increased because the unharvested crop scheme basically was underspent. So tillage was given 8 million euro in the budget, and the minister decided to dedicate this to the unharvested crop scheme in November. So the unharvested crop scheme only took up 1.67 million euro. There was 236 applicants. So the remainder of that funding then is after being given to top up that tillage payment. So the total was a little bit taken out of the 8 million before for the horticulture sector. So the total now is 12.63 million euro, and there's 8,400 growers that are going to be paid on the area of Ailsa Drape winter and spring barley, wheat, oats and rye that they declared on their BIS in 2023. And the maximum payment is 100 hectares per applicant. And the rate of payment now, as I said, is 50 euro. And the minimum area to be eligible for it is 5 hectares. So look, better news in that than had been announced on that previous payment of 28 euro. Now, a lot of you have emailed me, and thank you very much to tell me how payments are going, because we have farmers that were waiting on TIS, on the Tillage Incentive Scheme payment, the Strong Corporation measure, as well as protein in some cases. So some of these were being held up by the unharvested crop payment, and hopefully will issue or have issued. But others, there was no reason for. The SIM hadn't been inspected or anything. I've been made aware from two of the farmers who got on to me that they did receive payment this week. So please let me know if you did receive payment or if you're still awaiting payment. swalsh@farmersjournal.ie. Okay, on to the National Tillage Conference now. And look, the first thing that came up yesterday morning was the results of the winter planting survey from Chagas. So we talked about this on the podcast quite a bit. A lot of you probably did that survey. So the results are now out. And look, the results of that survey were not good. They were stark. And it showed that overall, on average, 62% of winter crops were planted. So the planned area of winter crops. So a huge area the farmers didn't get in, 38% of winter crops not in. The areas worst affected certainly are the east of the country, Wexford, Wicklow, Loud, Meath as well, and parts of Dublin. So the east of the country certainly a lot more badly affected. The figures on farmers who were direct drilling and min tilling were a lot lower, but those farmers, the direct drillers, certainly seemed to get on a lot better, probably because they went earlier. Direct drillers had about 71% of their area planted, plowers 60%, and min till 61%, and a mix of plough and min till 67%. But if we go into that then, the min till and the plough base the mix of both seem to have suffered most with crop establishment and resowing. So just on the areas to be resown, certainly Loud, Dublin, Meath, Westmeath came out the worst here. And in the plough system, there was between 5 and 13% to be resown, and the northeast is the highest there at 13%. In the mixed plough and min till system, The good old people up in the northwest who get all the rain usually have said that they have nothing to resow. And then between 11 and 26% on the remainder of the country, and again the northeast at the 26%. And then on min till ground, between 8 and 35% to be resown. And the 35% in that case on the min till situation is in the west and northwest, so Galway and Donegal. Farmers were asked then what they planned to plant in that area that they didn't get sown. So 47% said spring barley, 18% spring oats, 16% winter wheat, 15% beans and peas, and 5% a forage crop. And of course, the seed shortage came up at yesterday's tillage conference. We're still short, plenty of seed, definitely about 26,000 hectares. So, and while the seed trade are working to secure more seed, it's proving very difficult. So I suppose encouraging people, you know, to look at different cropping options like forage crops maybe, or you know, even things like kale, which can be planted later on in the season. Look, that's the highlights of those results. We have details on page 8 of the paper this week. And indeed, we've coverage of the tillage conference on page 2, page 8, 38 and 39 on the paper. So take a good look at that and make sure to pick up a copy. That's the bad news on the resowing and the fact that people don't have their crops in, but we're going to try and sort that out now. So if you're looking at those poor crops, here's some advice from Shea Phelan.
Shea, thanks for joining us. We're here at the tillage conference and a lot of people struggling there at the minute. They don't have their winter crops in, or they're looking at crops with patches or haven't come up at all in some cases. So plant counts, I suppose, is the first place to start where there is a crop. So what are we looking at on plant count targets for winter cereals?
Yeah, it's a good question, Siobhan, and you're right, there's a lot of variability out there. So I suppose we start off with what we're looking for first. If you take winter wheat crops out there at the moment, you're looking for 200 plus plants per square metre.
Okay, yeah.
And what I'm talking about really are crops that you just say, right, I'm going to take them through to harvest.
Yeah.
That you don't have to alter anything on them. For winter barley, for the two rows, you're looking at, you know, 250 plus.
Yeah.
For two rows, you're probably looking at 200. And for oats, then you're looking for about 250 as well. If you've anything less than that, then you have a decision to make.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Altered plant counts, yeah. Shay. So we're going to reduce our fertiliser and our fungicides on some crops because there is plants there.
Yeah.
So what figures are we looking at there?
So for barley you're looking at probably, or for wheat you're looking at probably about 100 plants per square metre. Anything above 100, 150 plants per square metre, you'll be fine. Mm. For barley you're probably looking at the 150, for two row barley you're probably looking at the 150 mark.
And
for
six rows
you're probably looking, again, between 100,
you're back to wheat figures kind of, yeah.
And for oats you're probably looking again about that 150 mark. Anything below that then you really have a decision to make whether you replant or not.
Okay.
And I suppose Again, we're talking about figures, but we're talking about them being evenly distributed. And I know that's easy for me to say here, standing here today,
yeah,
but actually the reality in field is an awful lot different.
Yeah, so farmers probably aren't looking at even plant stands or even poor plant stands. Yeah. You know, they're looking at big empty patches.
Yes.
Or small empty patches
exactly.
all over the field.
Yeah, exactly.
So what do those farmers do? And I suppose there are a lot of people today asking about bare patches and what way the department are going to treat them. So what's the story?
And that's the one we're not sure of yet. I suppose the department have to stand back and look and see what they get through the letterbox, if you like,
yeah.
and the application forms later on.
Mm.
If there's a lot of hassle and a lot of problems for farmers, they normally react. And to be fair to the Department of Agriculture, they're normally good at adapting to situations. That said, again, I mean, if you have an area that's only maybe 10 square metres that's bare or has a lower patch, that's very difficult to pick up on maps. So it really comes down to individual situations, unfortunately, and that's the way things are. The department, I no doubt, will react at some stage during the year, but it's going to depend on what's actually available in fields, you know.
We'd like it sooner rather than better.
Obviously.
Or rather than later, I mean, yeah.
But
Shay said there was also figures up there about replanting.
Yeah.
Like, replanting is a drastic option. But again, BPS, penalties, things like that. So if we do replant, the figure you showed today, I think you have to get 3.1 tonnes of spring barley if you replant. Is it after winter wheat?
Yeah, after failed winter wheat crop. Because don't forget, you have spent money already on the winter wheat crop going in. You have to rip that ground up again because in most cases that land is slumped now, so it's not you can't drill directly into it. You're not going to plough it, so you're going to run some sort of a cultivator through it. So that's a cost. You also have the cost of the seed that's gone in already.
Yeah.
So that all has to be added back in. So when you add that cost to the current cost of growing spring barley, that's bringing you up to almost winter barley costs, if you like.
Yeah.
So you have to get similar yields then in order to make it break even. And the figures that we're showing today, a 7-ton crop of winter wheat basically pays the same as a 7.5-ton crop of spring barley with those other costs included. So that's the economics of it, and there's no getting away from that. And I know we all like to grow nice, good, even crops and they look well and whatever, but I think this is a year where you're going to have to just analyse the economics of what you're actually doing and make sure that if you are going to grow an area of, or replant an area, that there's really nothing there and it's a substantial area. Sowing a tenth of an acre or less than that, those type of areas is really not viable, really, in my book.
Okay, so we should really be, people, I suppose, malt and barley, hoping you get it to pass.
Yeah.
And maybe beans are good options.
They're the ones, or maybe food grade oats is another one. They're the ones I would say give you the best chance of making a margin this year, bearing in mind that you have those other costs thrown in on top of them as well. So in a broader sense, I mean, whether you grow a poor crop of winter wheat or a medium crop of spring barley, really isn't going to amount to a whole lot. So you need those premium crops to give you that extra bit of a bonus, provided, as you say, they pass. And that's not always a given either, especially what we saw last year. So that's the gamble you have to take.
Yeah.
And I suppose you have to weigh that up on a field-by-field situation, on an individual-by-individual situation, then see what works best for you.
A few questions today then, Lassie, about herbicides. So
hopefully
those bad crops haven't got herbicides, but some of them have.
Some of them have.
Issues
and I was actually
talking
to a farmer at lunchtime today, and he said his worst field got a herbicide. So he's straight away looking at what are his options, and really all you can do then is look at the data was sprayed, go back and look at the products, look at the active ingredients that were in the tank, and then go to the label, because all the labels will have a section on them where they tell you in the event of a failed crop how many months you have to wait. Invariably it's 3 months, but some of them may be a little bit longer depending on the formulation, what have you. So just something, that information is there, you just have to go and look for it, you know.
So check your label, talk to your advisor, and talk to your advisor on all these decisions.
Exactly.
Talk them out.
Yes, exactly. Don't try and make that decision on your own. You know, the problem shares the problem halves, you know.
Yeah.
So it's always good to get somebody else's opinion as well, you know.
Thanks very much, Shay. Good advice.
No problem.
And now we're going to go straight to Dermot. And so Shay and Dermot both spoke together at the Tillage Conference as well, because Dermot has advice now on rotations, and hopefully he's going to encourage everybody to try and maintain those rotations on farm, because we really need to for profit, as Dermot showed yesterday at the Tillage Conference. And I suppose it comes with the caveat, look, we know this is going to be very difficult to do in 2024. Dermot, you're talking about importance of rotations today at the tillage conference, and like there's loads of people looking at fields, don't know what to do with them, but it's essential that we try and keep those break crops in the rotation, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very important if we can at all to kind of think long term and strategically if we can. But yeah, there's obviously limitations this year. Now I suppose it's not too bad, Siobhan, if it was a winter cereal was planned to go in there in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, if there's winter wheat, well then you're going to be looking at, you know, hopefully still getting the winter wheat in.
Yeah.
If not, maybe spring wheat if you had seed availability, but that's going to be very little. And after that, maybe spring barley. That's not really going to mess up your rotation too much. The one to watch there, though, is if you're replacing winter barley with something, and if the winter barley was being used as an entry for oilseed rape, just to make sure you kind of get a crop that you'll have out in time for an oilseed rape crop afterwards, you know.
Dermot, you had good figures there on the screen about profits. Like, obviously, profits are going to be... are going to benefit hugely if we have those crops in rotation. So, you know, coming out of a difficult year and going into maybe another difficult year, we need to do everything to maintain consistent profits.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, look, there's two ways probably of looking at rotations. The short-term way is kind of to look at it in terms of profit, right? Mm. But there's probably a longer way, term way as well. And in the profit sense, it makes a big impact because a lot of these crops are, you know, reasonably profitable themselves.
Yeah.
But the breaks, and the break crop could be oilseed rape, it could be beans, it could be oats, right? They act as a break for cereals. But in our knock bag trials, we're getting between, I suppose, 11 and 19% benefit in the following winter wheat crop.
Yeah.
And that's a huge boost to that wheat crop. So if you can have one of those every 5 years, you know, it'll boost your total rotational income. But if you have two of them every 5 years, which we showed there today, it's adding around 200 euros per hectare to your margin every year by having those break crops in there. And that's mainly for the benefit that it brings to the subsequent crop.
Yeah.
So in that context, it makes sense.
They're major figures. Mm. Workload as well, Dermot. It's probably on the, you know, it's down the list, but still very important.
It is, because you can spread the workload a little bit. As you say, it's down the list a bit. But if with good rotational planning and that, your kind of sowing windows, your harvest windows, you can effectively spread those out a little bit in the year. Okay, so, I mean, the obvious one is beans, right? You'll probably be sowing them a little bit earlier than you will your other spring crops. You'll certainly be harvesting that bit later.
Yeah.
So you're using your combine, you're using your sowing equipment at times of year that they wouldn't normally be used.
Yeah.
And that effectively means that a smaller combine can get through a larger area if there's a good mix of crops there, and that effectively reduces your cost. So that's another small bonus, but it's another bonus that's there, but probably not the main driver.
And we saw last year, like the spring barley, you know, we had more than 130,000 hectares of spring barley, and then some of it didn't get cut in the end or baled or whatever it may be. So definitely, well, I said it was down the list, it's still very important to have a spread.
Yeah, I think it's worth considering. It's certainly worth considering. Now, look, last year was a disaster, but you're right. Your spring barley and winter wheat, if you have those two crops, they're basically competing for the same harvest capacity, you know.
Yeah.
So the beans brings it out a bit. The winter oilseed rape probably overlaps a bit with winter barley, but not perfectly so. It's a little bit later, so that fills another bit of a slot there. And of course, the sowing of winter oilseed rape is at a different time than you'll be sowing every other crop as well.
Dermot, it came up in the panel discussion that, you know, we talk about grass weeds and delayed drilling and disease pressure and delayed drilling, but in Michael's survey there we saw the figures. You know, those who went with direct drill or mintill early had more crops in.
Yeah.
So there's a fine balance there in delaying drilling and then not getting your crops planted.
Yeah, there is. There's a very fine balance. And there's no doubt, like earlier sowing, when you get a really bad year like this, earlier sowing, you know, will give you a little bit of benefit. It's probably more important with the mintill or direct drill because they're certainly not suitable to later sowing. Okay. In a normal year, ploughing, you will be able to plough later. Plough and establish successfully later than you will mintill or direct drill systems. And even this year, you know, if you had a, you know, the ploughing system was probably better in the later sowing slots, but it didn't overcome the problems, right? So, but I would be, we have to be very wary of, you know, going towards early sowing systems, right? Okay, it brings a disease challenge, but the real one at the moment is grass weeds. Our armory of products for controlling grass weeds is becoming seriously challenged because of resistance to development. And by early sowing, we're putting more challenge there in that system.
Yeah.
And like we had the grass weed workshop there this afternoon, And like, you know, the problems that are out there, and if we are to lose more actives out there for whatever reason, either through resistance or through non-registration, we really need to change our focus to cultural weed methods, weed control methods. And one part of that is sowing date. So we need to be very careful of that. So it's a difficult choice.
Absolutely, final thing, Dermot. You warn people, you know, there is seed being imported into the country, and you warn people to keep track of those fields and where it's being planted.
Yeah, I think so. If there's any doubt at all, like, while the stuff will be, you know, certified and certain standards and all the rest, there is a greater risk coming from other countries that there's going to be weeds in there that could cause us problems. Either resistant weeds or different weeds than we normally have, or more grass weeds that we would have in our own stock, because our own seed stocks are very good in that regard.
Yeah.
So I think it's hugely important to know what field that seed went into, not just for this year, but for future years, and to walk those fields really, really well looking for grass weeds, because that is the first point of control, and to actually hand drove those grass weeds for this year and maybe for a couple of years after.
Yeah, hopefully they're not there. Hopefully it'll be a nice calm walk.
Hopefully so. It'll stretch the legs and nothing else.
Thanks very much, Dermot.
Okay, Siobhan.
Now, there was big news this week at the conference, and it only took up a short space of time. John Spink delivered news on the carbon footprint of Irish grain, and it only actually took up about 10 minutes at the conference. But they're the start of the results, and there will be more results in about a month's time. But it's still very important. So we have these carbon results across the tillage pages this week, so you'll have to pick up a copy there. But I spoke to John Spink after his presentation at the conference yesterday. So let's hear from John now.
I hate it when that happens.
Sorry. John, thanks for joining us. You gave some really good information there. Information on carbon footprints of Irish grain, which farmers and the industry have been eagerly awaiting. So very good to see, and some good results up there.
Yep. It's it shows what we thought all along, in that Irish grain is low carbon footprint relative to there's some places in Europe that aren't that different, but certainly internationally they're low, and that's in part due to the fact that we have very good yields.
Yeah, and that's the point you made inside Irish, like, certainly not a surprise, but we need those figures. Like, we hadn't the figures before, so this is the first step on the road to get these figures. So you might just explain. These are based on a trial in Oak Park. So, you know, they're not the eventual figure that we're going to put into any global databases.
No. The figures that I presented today were just the data from a rotation experiment, 5 years of a rotation experiment. So we have every crop in every year.
Yeah.
And that was just to demonstrate how the tool works. Obviously, to get data for Irish grain overall, we need to gather information on what people are doing. And that's the big thing we're going to have to get our heads around, is getting the activity data. So how much fertilizer are people using, you know, what cultivations are they using, what yields are they getting, and that's the real thing we've got to struggle with now, is how do we gather all of that data. You know, if people are putting it on something like Gatekeeper, then it's very easy to get the data out, but if it's all recorded in diaries or on bits of paper in notebooks, then it's very there's a huge job of work then to gather that data.
Yeah, so, I mean, good from a management point of view, obviously, to have all your data together and piled properly, but won't be more important going forward if we want these kind of figures. A question that came up, John, I suppose you looked at the different rotations, so and we have all this in this week's paper, so winter wheat in a rotation came out the best, and like you said at the start, not a surprise, because it's a high-yielding crop, so high input, high output, the yield makes it a bit lower, I suppose.
Yeah, because obviously you have all of the emissions per hectare associated with growing a crop, and you divide that by the yield to get the emissions per tonne.
Yeah.
So the higher the yield, the lower the carbon footprint.
So I think winter wheat's coming in at about 169 kgs per tonne or something. Am I wrong, John?
I won't tell you you're wrong, because I can't remember exactly, Siobhan.
You're making faces at me, but I think it's somewhere around there, and then they gradually go up. And oilseed rape came up with a high carbon footprint, but a lower yield in oilseed rape.
Obviously, I mean, the oilseed rape was yielding about 5 tonnes a hectare, whereas the wheat would be 12 or 12 and a half. So you're dividing by five rather than dividing by 12. So the emissions per hectare probably aren't that different.
Mm.
But, you know, one of the points I made inside is that you can't really compare a tonne of oilseed rape with a tonne of wheat. Oilseed rape, high protein, is high oil, so it's high energy. So if you were to work it out per unit of energy harvested, you'd probably find they were much closer. I haven't done it, but I would expect you'd find them they're much closer.
You examined plough and mintil, and a question that came up expectedly came up, I suppose, why isn't mintil much lower than plough? Because ploughing is releasing loads of carbon emissions.
Because there's been quite a lot of work done in Chagas over the years, mainly by Gary Lanigan.
Yeah.
And ploughing in Ireland does not release as much carbon as it does in hotter, drier countries.
Okay.
And a lot of that information about ploughing versus minimum tillage or direct drilling comes from places like the States, from Australia. Where, and, you know, there were the dust bowls in the States back in the day, you know, from ploughing, and they burnt off all the carbon very quickly, and the soil just blew away. But that doesn't happen in Ireland. Even our long-term tillage lands in Ireland are still relatively high in organic matter if you compare them to other countries. Certainly, even in the east of England where it's drier.
And mintil then has higher nitrous oxide emissions, and nitrous oxide more potent than carbon dioxide.
Yeah, it was slightly higher nitrous oxide emissions when you applied fertiliser. Okay, in not every time, but sometimes on the minimum tillage. And basically, that slight increase in nitrous oxide really offset any the slight reduction in carbon dioxide emissions from the cultivations.
Okay. You broke down the carbon footprint of a winter wheat crop, and this is in the paper, they can see it on a pie chart. Fertiliser manufacture takes up a huge amount of our emissions. Why is that?
It's just because manufacturing nitrogen fertiliser is a very energy-intensive process. And we've used the European average figure, which is 3.7 kilograms of CO2 per kilogram of N produced. But that's hugely variable depending on the factory where it's made. So if you go to the most efficient factories in Europe, they have, you know, they'll be using gas, they'll have things like energy capture and that type of thing, and that about halves that to about 1.8 kilos of CO2 per kilo of N. But if you go to a very inefficient factory, you know, an old factory maybe in Eastern Europe or China where they're running on coal, that figure could be up to 10. So it, I suppose it does show that where you source your fertilizer from on a tillage farm has a huge impact on your carbon footprint. But obviously you've got to have some way of recording where you get your fertilizer from, where your fertilizer is manufactured, and proving where it's manufactured. So the more detail you get into, the more what we call activity data or records from farmers are needed.
The more detail we get into, John, the more complicated this thing gets as
well. It certainly does.
But lastly, more data on the way from other farms.
Yes, there's been quite a lot of there's been data collected from a number of farmers from 2021. I think just shy of 50 farmers for a range of crops.
Okay.
Which will come out sometime next month. And we're also collecting some more now in Wexford. But it's really now we've got the tool. We need to start using it.
Yeah, so it can be built up relatively quickly.
Hopefully.
Yeah, very good. Really positive news. Thanks, John. Thanks very much to John for joining us. And great to hear those figures. Look, we've been waiting for them for so long. It's great to get results and really looking forward to hearing those ones from the Tierlong growers. Okay, we'll move on to grain trends now. And look, grain markets are not good this week. No point saying anything else. Not looking positive. I suppose pressure on again. Look back to Black Sea grain coming in, very competitive. And then, you know, big crops coming from South America. You know, those things are still continue to affect the market, and unfortunately prices now are going down. I didn't get the Tierland price this week, but look, the I suppose any of you who are getting those prices will see how that is falling. Last week on the 23rd of January, growers were offered €197 per ton for green wheat and €187 a ton for green barley. So not good. Maize prices coming down as well across the world. And as you know, we always, if we see maize price going down, it's generally not good for Irish grain. It's early on Thursday morning now. Markets haven't opened yet. So I'll just give you where the markets closed on Wednesday night. So Matif wheat for December, 225.25. So they were down 175 on the Tuesday close. So moved down again that yesterday. Corn also down, and down by about €2 or more across the different months of the year, nearby and far away. And rapeseed was up, so that's good. So November rapeseed closed on Wednesday evening at 4.28 per ton, up 5.50 on the previous evening. So that's positive news on rapeseed. Malting barley now, I'm just looking at the physical price. I don't have access to the next season's price. But the Fob Creel malt and barley doesn't say what variety either, is at 279 now. So that took a big drop. That was at 290 for a long time. And went to 280 last week. But yeah, so I think I went to 280 last week. Yeah, it fell by €14 last week, and then it was at 295 and then 294, and then on Tuesday went to 279 and it stayed there now. Good news on grain prices this week. Dairy Gold announced a top up to grain and milk suppliers. So grain suppliers will get €2 per tonne excluding VAT on grain purchased in 2023. The €2 per tonne won't be added to the malting barley or the beans price. And the co-op said it's in recognition of the challenging year suppliers had in 2023. So a positive note to end grain price on there. Now we'll go to the weather forecast and see what Met Éireann are saying this week. So I'll start off with Friday. Mostly dull day overall with a good deal of cloud around, patches and outbreaks of rain or drizzle and mist, temperatures of 11 to 13 degrees, in moderate fresh and occasionally gusty winds, and temperatures at night 6 to 10 degrees. Saturday mainly cloudy and dull again, outbreaks of rain and drizzle more persistent and heavy in the west, possibly turning brighter and colder in the north during the afternoon, temperatures of 9 to 13 degrees, mildest in the southeast and light to moderate southwesterly winds. Plenty of cloud on Saturday night with further outbreaks of rain, drizzle and mist, and lowest temperatures of 5 to 9 degrees generally. The forecast for Sunday then is mostly cloudy, so it's very similar across the days, 10 to 13 degrees and fresh and gusty southwest winds, dry in most areas on Sunday night, temperatures dropping to 6 to 10 degrees. And currently Monday to Wednesday looks like there'll be little change in the start of next week. Continue mild in a mainly west to southwest airflow with outbreaks of rain and drizzle at times. And if I look across the rainfall chart, so it doesn't look too bad Thursday and Friday. Nice drop of rain Saturday. Rain more so in the northwest and east on Sunday. Very little rain Monday anywhere. And then Tuesday, rain everywhere. And Wednesday, it looks like heavier rain everywhere. Okay, that's it for this week. Look, there's plenty of events on. I'd encourage you to get out and go to them. The Chagas Spring Seminars are on across the country. Just to mention to the Wexford Grain Awards are on this Friday night, so we'll bring you the results of that next week. But that's it for this week's podcast. Thanks very much for joining us, for listening. Thanks to our guests, to Shay, Dermot and John. Thanks to Claire and Jerome for editing back at base. Until next week, stay safe and keep the tillage flag flying.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.